Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, I think there is a compromise in the making. Democrats had originally called for tax cuts for people below $250,000, Republicans for everybody. What if we moved it up to $1 million? Everyone below $1 million will get a tax cut, but the millionaires and billionaires won't.
Senator Chuck Schumer signaling a possible compromise on the Bush tax cuts as Congress begins a lame duck session today in advance of the much more Republican Congress to come in January. Now, one of the first orders of business is the Charlie Rangel House Ethics Committee hearing, as we were just hearing on the news. Some call it a trial. That seems to be in dispute, hearing or trial. And it got underway about an hour ago. We will update that. Several times this morning, Rangel accused of not reporting income on property in the Dominican Republic, taking four rent-stabilized apartments as an unallowed gift in Harlem, and collecting donations for his City College Center from companies with business before the House Ways and Means Committee when he was chairman. Here is Ethics Committee Chair Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, Democrat from California, speaking about an hour ago about what the media keeps calling a trial.
It is important to bear in mind that the proceeding is a hearing, not a trial. As members of the adjudicatory subcommittee, we are neither accusers nor are we defenders of our colleague, Mr. Rangel. It is our job and our duty to act impartially as finders of fact and law.
Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. Now, when Rangel finally spoke, appearing without counsel, he once again focused on the process of the trial, calling into question the timing of the hearing and the fact that he has not been able to raise money to retain counsel. Here is a minute of Congressman Rangel from just a short time ago.
I don't think it's fair that I participate in any type of proceeding if, in fact, what you are basically telling me, that the political calendar will not allow you enough counsel, enough time to allow me to get a lawyer at this crucial point in my life. 50 years of public service is on the line. I truly believe that I'm not being treated fairly and that history will dictate that, notwithstanding the political calendar, I am entitled to a lawyer during this proceeding. I want to thank you for your courtesy. There's a lot of pain that I feel because I fought in the wars. I've prosecuted in the U.S. Attorney's Office. I've served as a legislator in the state. I am so proud of my record in the Congress. I love this Congress. I love this country. I think I'm entitled to more.
Congressman Charlie Rangel, moments ago. That hearing is now on hold, by the way. The Ethics Committee is in a closed-door executive meeting considering Rangel's request for a delay. We will have more clips from the hearing later in the show, assuming it resumes. For now, we have an article and a related poll question on our politics website. You can go to itsafreecountry.org to leave your comment and vote on what you think should happen to Charlie Rangel. Do that at itsafreecountry.org, our politics website. And let's talk about this, but also some other things, because the lame duck session is also looking at Bush tax cuts and inheritance tax changes, which expire on January 1st, so Congress will have to do something or decide to do nothing. And there is Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a repeal already passed by the House, could be taken up again by the Senate, with John McCain threatening a filibuster. So with us to talk about all these things are David Drucker, staff writer from Roll Call, which covers Congress, and Diane Brady, senior writer from Bloomberg Businessweek. Hi, David. Hi, Diane. Thanks for coming on today.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
David, anything you want to add to what we know so far about the Rangel hearing? How is it that he feels so unprepared after months and months and months of waiting for this date?
Well, I don't know that he's actually unprepared. I just think that he's trying to work this thing to his benefit, and by saying that he should be able to have a lawyer and needs other changes to the process, I think what he's trying to do is set up a process that set up an image that makes it look as though this thing is unfairly stacked against him to put himself in a more positive light, and I think that's what that's all about.
And this reporting that he has run out of money for a lawyer. Do you know what money he ran out of? Was he using campaign funds to pay for this lawyer? Was that an allowable expense from his campaign money? Because I gather one of the questions here for him is whether he should sort of impoverish himself personally to pay for a lawyer.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what money he did run out of, but I will say that he's allowed to use, any member of Congress is allowed to use their campaign funds for legal matters.
They are.
Yes, and they can also set up a legal defense fund that is approved by the Federal Election Commission, and you can raise money specifically for that. So he can do both. He may have already used up his campaign funds, but there's nothing stopping him from setting up a legal defense fund, and there's nothing illegal about people donating to that.
And listeners, you can chime in on what took place already this morning, which could be it for the day, could be it for months, who knows, if they grant Congressman Rangel's request. Of this Rangel hearing or trial, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. David, why would he want it delayed? I mean, a Republican House is coming in. I realize the Ethics Committee is 50-50. But why would it be to his advantage to not have this take place in the Democratic-controlled lame duck session of Congress rather than wait?
Well, that's an interesting question. The one thing I think he might be contemplating is that if he can have this trial while the Republicans control the House, he might be able to set this up as more of a partisan issue. In other words, well, the Republicans are coming after me, and it might put him in a more sympathetic light. You know, I also have to think that maybe if he can kick this thing down the road long enough, he might be calculating that there might be less and less of an appetite for this to be dealt with. And finally, and of course, I'm just speculating here, but in the wake of the election, he might be concerned that Democrats might use him as an example to prove that they've gotten the message. They need to clean up their act, and the first way they can do that is to go after Charlie Rangel pretty hard. But I think you bring up an interesting point in that my first reaction would have been just get it done.
Yeah, get it done. And from what I could tell, there's not that much at stake, right? No one expects Rangel to be expelled. A relatively mild reprimand or some kind of censure is all that's technically at stake here. Or is that diminishing it?
Well, I'm not convinced that he couldn't end up being expelled, but I just tend to think that he was reelected, and so the voters chose to reelect him, notwithstanding what was on the table. I just have to think that here's a man who really wants to continue to serve in Congress and doesn't want this to go the wrong way, and he's probably just angling for every advantage he can get.
All right, let's go on to some other issues facing the lame duck Congress, and we can come back to Rangel if any of you want to call in on this. But you can also call in on the possible Bush tax cuts compromise. We also have a poll question on our site about that today, and you can call in with your comments. Would you take this Chuck Schumer deal, if he's the one behind it, instead of having the tax rates go up for people making $200,000 or $250,000 a year? How about only on income above $1 million a year? Diane Brady from Bloomberg Business Week, we heard that Schumer clip on that. Is that a real possibility, that kind of compromise?
It's interesting. That's been one of the things that's been out there debated, which is 250,000 household income does not feel rich to some Americans, certainly those living in the tri-state area. So $1 million, a lot of people have felt is more fair, especially in this environment, as people are still in homes that are worth less than they paid for and are still struggling to make ends meet. And frankly, in some cases have private school bills, which I know doesn't cause a lot of empathy among, some Americans, but these are not people who feel that they're terribly rich. $1 million is thought to be more fair. So Schumer is weighing in on the debate, but this is not the first time that that figure has been thought to be perhaps the best cutoff right now at this point in the economy.
What would be the difference in government revenue from $1 million versus $200,000 or $250,000? It would be $200,000 for individuals, $250,000 for couples. That's why those numbers are both out there. But the president keeps saying restoring the old tax cuts or keeping all these tax cuts would blow another $700 billion hole in the deficit over 10 years. First of all, is that a real number? And secondly, how different would it be if restored only for those seven-figure earnings?
I've seen, and David can weigh in, is about half that much you would get if you just tax the people over $1 million versus the $250,000 in terms of extending the tax cuts. The feeling is this is probably going to be temporary, so talking about a 10-year time frame probably isn't the right way to look at it. And the other issue right now is the revenue side of the equation is that you've got to get people out there spending, and one of the realities is that a lot of people in that even 500,000, ridiculous it sounds, consider themselves middle class. They are cutting back. So I don't know what the actual revenue figures would be in terms of what we'd actually take in, but so much of it's contingent on people hiring. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes these are small business owners, but I think that it would probably cut it by about half is what I've seen.
And we should remind people again that when we talk about these income tax levels going back up, it would be only for the income earned above those amounts. So
exactly.
If it kicked back in at $250,000, that whole first $250,000 worth of income would still be taxed at the lower rates. It's only from $250,001 above and above, or $1 million and one and above under this Schumer compromise, that would be subject to the higher rates. So, David, how fast are the politics here changing?
The politics are changing, I think, in the Republicans' favor in terms of what's going to happen with the Bush tax cuts. One thing I can tell you is there won't be any compromise that involves not extending the tax cuts for all income earners. There's just no way Republicans will go for it or allow it. Number one, as a matter of philosophy, it's just not how they think. Number two, they think this is good politics for them. And number three, they think that doing so, allowing these tax cuts to be preserved at current levels, will actually help income into the government because they believe it'll help the economy and therefore generate more tax dollars. And they're also concerned about how sole proprietorships who declare their taxes as individuals will be affected. And, of course, these are usually small businesses that hire. This is the Republican viewpoint. I think what Senator Schumer is smartly getting at, and Diane mentioned it, and we haven't heard enough about it, is that people making $250,000 to $500,000 to $600,000 a year obviously aren't hungry, but they're working hard for their money and they don't feel like they're rich. And so Democrats are trying to move this into literally only a tax increase on millionaires and billionaires, as we keep hearing that term over and over now. But Republicans will not allow it to happen. It's not going to happen in the lame duck. It's not going to happen in the new Congress.
So are you predicting that there's going to be an old-fashioned standoff at the OK Corral, or whatever that phrase was, that is going to be all or nothing, where either President Obama is going to have to compromise, because it doesn't matter what the Democrats in Congress do if they don't have the votes, but either President Obama is going to have to completely cave and give it up on all the Bush tax cuts, or the Republicans are somehow going to lose and let them expire for the middle class as well.
Here's what I think will happen, and you're right, it is up to the president. The compromise that I see happening is that the Republicans will accept a temporary extension of the current tax rates for the higher income earners, meaning that we'd revisit this political standoff in anywhere from 2 to 4 years. If the president goes there, Republicans will come down from their permanent extension request for all income brackets.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a matter of whether that compromise is reached in the remaining days of this Congress or early in the next Congress. And I think that's where we're headed. If it doesn't happen until next year, you'll see them make it retroactive beginning of the year so that nobody will end up actually having their taxes increased.
Phone call on this from Nick in Cliffside Park. Nick, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I think if the Democrats cave and extend everything for 2 years, it's a political loss because they're rubbing salt in the wounds of the base. What I think the right strategy is to not let the Republicans bluff their way through this and to allow the tax cuts to expire, on the in this way, pass or propose legislation that would simply give all of the tax cuts proactively to everybody who earns less than $250,000. Start with a brand new bill and challenge the Republicans to not support that. Let the tax cuts for the rich expire and offer an alternative that gives everybody else a tax cut. And if the Republicans are willing to let the rest of the country go to hell just so they can keep their affinity for the rich, then that exposes them for what they are. That would take courage, and that would be a political winner, and it would be a policy winner, because there's $2 trillion at stake over the next 10 years. Yeah. Giving this money back to the rich loses the country $2 trillion. How is that fiscally responsible?
Nick, thank you for your call. Diane Brady, how about the math that Nick puts out there from his point of view?
Well, I think that, I heard the proposed new bill, and that automatically, I think, spells doomsday in this current scenario that we're looking at. I think lame duck is actually very appropriate to what we're seeing. I think that one thing, there's been a lot of focus on the tax cuts. We do have to recognize that revenue is a real issue. And in fact, I just came back from a big entrepreneurial summit. I think it's called the Ernst & Young Strategic Growth Forum. The biggest complaint among entrepreneurs there is that they do not have an environment in which they feel they can create jobs. But their issues are less about personal taxation. It's more about access to credit. It's about the health care bill. So I think we have to look at this fairly holistically. Yes, the tax cuts is a real issue. I think David raises the points. The Republicans are intransigent on this one. 1 million may prove to be a compromise, certainly doing something temporary for the next year or two. But the real issue is creating an environment in which people can create jobs and creating an environment in which people are comfortable to spend.
Diane Brady from Business Week. You're just back from an entrepreneurial summit, you said,
mm-hmm.
and on another issue. So is President Obama. He's just back from the G20 summit and meeting with leaders from various Asian countries. And it's very rare for a president to go to a summit expecting a trade deal or any deal and come home with nothing. But that seems to be exactly what happened here in the case of South Korea. Here is the president speaking upon his return.
Instead of hitting home runs, sometimes we're going to hit singles. But they're really important singles. I'm not interested in signing a trade agreement just for the sake of an announcement.
So what happened to the new G20 of 2 years ago that could tackle global economic crises together?
You know, it's interesting. I think one of the things we're seeing right now, first of all, I think Obama has lost some of his the aura, certainly, with the last elections. But there's so much anger out there with what the U.S. is doing with the dollar, this so-called quantitative easing that is essentially printing more money, buying treasuries. You've got a lot of countries out there, Russia, China, Brazil, that are accusing us essentially of flooding the system and trying to buy our way back to health. I think that has also created an environment in which we're not going to see a lot of goodwill on the other side and trade deals, and I think that's part of what we saw at the G20.
Is this latest big idea to jumpstart the economy, the Fed buying $600 billion of our own government bonds, crumbling? Other countries hated on it at the G20 summit, and I gather some Republicans in Congress are turning on it too.
I think it's actually in some ways working if you look at in terms of what's happening with the economy. But the risk is...
Did they do it already? You say it's working.
You know, you're just getting more symbols in terms of the options that are being purchased, in terms of what's happening with the stock markets and such. You know, but ultimately, the long-term effect, a lot of people are worried about inflation. Even though right now everybody looks to Japan, they talk about deflation. Practically every business leader I talk to and many other folks, certainly international business leaders, believe long-term that this is a recipe that's going to probably ultimately harm the U.S. economy more than it helps it.
And David, from Roll Call, talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell before we go. Where does that stand now? Because this is something else the lame duck Congress is supposed to take up, right?
Correct. And I think it's still an open question about whether they're going to be able to deal with this in the limited amount of time that they have. And I just don't think there's a real appetite to get into something this politically volatile. at least potentially, between now and the end of the year. I think really it's going to all be up to Senator McCain and whether or not he decides to block this thing in the Senate. And I think it, you know, doesn't help that the Marine Corps appears to be resistant to this. It's one of those things where we're just going to have to wait and see.
But President Obama appointed the Joint Chiefs of Staff to come back in December with recommendations, including how to roll it back if they do roll it back. That's going to come out around December 1st. And if the Joint Chiefs, and we're talking about the Joint Chiefs of Staff, come back with a report on how to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and with a recommendation that it's irrelevant to national security, will the Republicans go against the military leaders? David? Did we lose David? I think I've asked a complete stumper of a question. Somehow, David, now we got you back. Sorry.
I just think it depends on what they think of the recommendation, how it reads. Senators will always kind of do what they want if they're so inclined, and a recommendation from the administration, even the Joint Chiefs on this, won't necessarily change their mind, but it might make them feel more amenable to going in that direction.
And is it your understanding that the Joint Chiefs will come back with such a recommendation, or are they going to come back with how to roll it back, because that's what President Obama asked them to do, but with a statement that we don't think it's right?
Well, I think that's kind of what we need to see, is how strong of a recommendation do they make? Do they say that it's completely irrelevant to national security, it should be rolled back immediately, it's irrelevant and useless? Or are they going to say that the goal is to get there, but we still need to do more studying and talking and understanding of what it means, and we need to act slowly and deliberatively? I think we need to see what the statement is going to be from the Joint Chiefs.
Diane Brady, did you want to give the Bloomberg Businessweek perspective on Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
You know, the only thing I would say, and this is more of a macro point, is if you look at poll after poll, Americans have become so much more tolerant of, you know, homosexuality, rights for, you know, domestic partners, same sex. So ultimately, the wind really is in the direction of going against this, which is if somebody wants to be openly gay in the military, the vast majority of Americans still believe that that should be their right. And the rhetoric is being done at a very high level. Certainly, the political rhetoric is a certain way, but I think the tone of the country has changed a lot in the last 10 years.
Well, it may be a macro point that takes a long time to play out.
Sure.
It may take, you know, another part of a generation before enough people in Congress catch up with that. By the way, this just in from the Associated Press, David, give me a quick impression. The House Ethics Committee has denied Congressman Charles Rangel's plea for a delay in the trial or hearing on alleged ethics abuses. So what does that mean? Will they reconvene immediately and continue to hold that hearing?
It's possible. I don't know the mechanics of this, but I think politically what this means is there's no appetite among Democrats to give this guy a pass at this point. I think they want to deal with this and not look as though they're helping out somebody who might appear to be corrupt. And I think this is what happens after a tough election.
So that trial is reconvening. And how about that distinction that we heard Zoe Lofgren, Congresswoman Democrat from California, make at the beginning? She chairs the Ethics Committee, and she said this is not a trial, as the media keeps calling it. This is a hearing. Is that an important distinction?
Well, it might be, but the public's going to see it as a trial, so it doesn't really matter what she calls it or what it really is.
All right, and it is underway, even with Rangel not being represented by counsel today because he says he has run out of money for that. You would think he could get somebody to represent him pro bono, David, don't you?
You'd think.
I mean, he's Charlie Rangel, right? You would think there are believers in his cause, there are believers
you'd think
him.
Although, you know, I have to wonder, I don't know if it would be actually legal for him to have pro bono representation.
Really?
Because that could be seen as a de facto in-kind donation. There are all sorts of rules about what people can do for members of Congress.
All right. Well, we will continue to update on this trial as it goes on through the morning. And I want to thank David Drucker from Roll Call and Diane Brady from Business Week for being our first guest today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come in a minute.